Hello and welcome to Open Sources Guelph for another Thursday afternoon. My name is Scotty Hertz, and I'm all alone in the studio today. Adam A. Donaldson, our chief assignment editor, is on assignment, so we're going to play some of our greatest hits from the files. You may or may not have heard them, and if you haven't heard them, you'll hear them for the first time, and if you have heard them, you can enjoy them again. First off, we're going to talk to Lloyd Longfeld. Actually, just Adam is. He spoke to Adam last month, I think it was. And I thought I was there, too. No, I wasn't there, too. But I was there for Mike Schreiner, our MPP, and he will be coming up in the second half of the show. So let's get to those now. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM.
Okay. Lloyd Longfeld, thank you for popping by today on this beautiful Friday.
Yeah, we've got spring in Guelph. You've got to love it. And here we are in the studio.
See, our windowless studio.
Where are the windows in this place?
Deep in the UC, which was built in Soviet Russia in 1967. I want to start with breaking-ish news, because I imagine as co-chair of the Auto Caucus, you've had a busy 24 hours since Fiat Chrysler announced some cuts in Windsor.
Yeah, I've been in... last night I was involved with what was going on there. It was very much a surprise to the government. We didn't have the same level of engagement as we did when General Motors was going through their decisions in North America. So it did catch me off guard personally. But I was on the phone last night on my way to a town hall up in Center Wellington between that and a curling bonspiel with environmental engineering companies at Guelph Curling Club. We were dealing with that news as
your life is weird.
Yeah, I know. Went from curling to 1,500 job loss potentially in Chrysler in one of our major, in fact, our largest employer in the Windsor area. And again, the Unifor Union working with that. It was a surprise to all involved. I have had some conversations later last night, and I've been keeping up with things through the course of the day, but I am in meetings today at the University of Guelph. We're doing a hackathon looking at the circular food economy. We've got a lot of students working with 10 businesses or organizations in Guelph around sustainable food supply, coming up with some solutions by 8 o'clock tonight. So it's a 12-hour hackathon I'm in the middle of. Came out for coffee break to see my buddy Adam. But it's something that I will be much more involved with over the weekend and, of course, next week up in Ottawa.
Yeah, there seems to be no firm answers. And I think it was, again, you said it was a surprise, and that seemed to be what the Unifor rep was getting at too. I wonder though, what's in terms of things you're hearing, what's going on in the auto sector right now? Because it seems like there's some kind of shift going when you count what happened in Windsor, what happened in Oshawa. There was everything that was being negotiated through the USMCA. People will say that, you know, we gave some concessions for dairy so we can protect auto, and that seems to be not working out in our favor at the moment. So, you know, what are we not seeing that's going on in the auto sector right now?
Well, I think without speaking directly about Chrysler, because I'm still finding out what's going on there, but in general what's happening is the shift to electric vehicles and the shift away from the internal combustion engine is something that all manufacturers are working on. Fiat Chrysler has been working on some of this, I know, but I don't know whether that applies to the Windsor situation. So the platforms are moving towards electric vehicles. You saw in the budget that we presented last week the reinstallation of the incentive to go to electric vehicles, $5,000 for vehicles under $45,000, which gives access to the, opening of the market. You know, the market is open for the lower value vehicles, the higher value vehicles. We're assuming that people buying those have money for them, and we're really trying to get people purchasing the entry level vehicles. And we're also looking at fleets, so that vehicle fleets for businesses now have 100% tax write down in the first year to encourage businesses to go towards the car of the future. As we move to the car of the future, of course, the car of the past becomes the question mark. And in some cases, especially with General Motors, they're freeing up capital to invest in the car of the future, which meant $6 billion had to be freed up, and they did that by closing some plants in Canada, the United States, South Korea, and a few to be named later. And maybe that's what's going on with Chrysler. But in general, the industry is shifting to the car of the future, whether it's artificial intelligence or different fuel sources. And the traditional vehicles then become question marked if they aren't making in quantity or if they aren't making money at them. Then they become subject to changes, which may be what we're seeing in Windsor.
It almost seems like it's a surprise to these automakers that this shift is going on. And I mean, it seems like they've been caught on a back foot. I mean, at least that's how it feels like when the way they explain it. It's like, oh, now we've got to move to EV, like on a dime, it almost seems like.
No, there is the EV, but there's also volumes. And the volumes have been declining on many of the lines. The volumes in Oshawa had been declining for a number of years. They needed, I believe the number was 400,000 vehicles a year, and they were less than half that coming off the line. So it was an unprofitable part of their business. The production was good quality, good jobs. The union had done a great job there as well. But at the end of the day, the volumes weren't there as the market changes. Now, on EVs, it's less than 1% of the market. We were up close to 4% with the provincial incentives. When they got removed, we dropped back to less than 1% of new car purchases. Our goal is to get to 10% in the next 2 years. And so we think with helping through some of the programs we've introduced that we will see the market move towards 10% of new car purchases. So that's not a big swing in the market overall. It's more of a change from the sedans to SUVs and trucks, which are now 75% of the market. Now, the minivans in Windsor, again, I haven't got the analysis on that to see what's going on.
Well,
I was surprised that it happened. I was surprised along with many other people.
There were a number of people surprised.
So I just met with FCA 2 weeks ago, and that didn't come up in conversation, so that's unfortunate.
You being here today is kind of fortuitous because, you know, we've had this news from Fiat Chrysler. Monday, the carbon tax goes into effect. Can you talk a little about, you know, maybe what happens on Monday in terms of, like, what the mechanism? Like, are we going to see something happen on Monday that, you know, will tell us the carbon tax is now in effect?
Well, one thing that we'll see is we'll see the Conservatives making a lot of noise. I'm just looking up on my phone. I got a text from Andrew Scheer last night.
The Andrew Scheer?
Yeah, the person that's in charge of the Conservative Party of Canada texted me to say that Justin Trudeau's carbon tax was going to do terrible things to the country.
Right. And this is something that's like, it's like kind of like the new robocalls. That it's a mass text.
Thought it's funny that a Liberal member of Parliament was getting a he could talk to me across the aisle if he'd like to, but we think that we are definitely on the right track. In fact, we know we're on the right track in terms of the economics. All studies point to market solutions being the way to change behavior, which will help us in the fight against climate change. What we'll see, if it's a 4 cent a liter increase in gasoline, I calculated on my vehicle, that's going to cost me about $125 a year. And what we'll also be seeing is the credit back from the federal government, which in my case will be somewhere around $300 a year. So there will be other places where pollution will be priced, like home heating. So I will have something around $200 a year with something around $200 a year credit. But when you're getting it every day at the pump, number one, that's going to make you think about the vehicle you're driving.
Right.
Even though you get a credit once a year from the federal government, your daily credits or your daily expenses aren't as on the same reimbursement. And that's where the Conservative Party is trying to make some political mileage to say that every day you're going, every time you go to the pump, you can thank the federal government for all this money that you're going to be paying. On the other side, the federal government is reimbursing. And so when they call it a carbon tax, it's actually carbon pricing. It's part of an economic solution that we're trying to drive. And we're also trying to put the incentive, or we are putting the incentives in place for green infrastructure to reduce the amount of heating costs and the energy costs on buildings. The provincial government tried to block that as well, and we found a way to go to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities with about $1 billion, $1.02 billion to be more precise, for communities and people to apply for green infrastructure upgrades. So we're trying to help people change behavior by incenting them to use less emitting fuel sources. And on the other hand, if you don't, you'll be paying for less emitting, or for the emitting fuel sources. Conservatives say we're grabbing money, we're taxing, but it's all going back to the market in the form of credits or incentives, either to personal or to businesses that are also wanting to access funds.
Is your caucus sweating the court challenge? Because not coincidentally, or maybe coincidentally, Doug Ford is down the road today, talking about ramping up the heat on his end.
Yeah, no, there's a court challenge. Saskatchewan, Ontario, I believe Manitoba might be part of that as well. We're absolutely convinced that we're within our jurisdictional rights to do what we're doing. And we think that the court challenge is just trying to rally the troops on the other side to say that the federal government doesn't know what they're doing. And really what we see from the province in many, many cases now is Doug Ford's taking shots at Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. It isn't even conservative versus liberal. It's really a personal thing, which is seems to be the way that Doug Ford goes to market is by taking going after personal vendettas. And so I see that personally as something that is more posturing than us doing something that's illegal that can get challenged in the courts. But of course, the judiciary are there to make those decisions, and we respect their decisions. Whatever they say, they are the judiciary, and that's their job to review things.
It's interesting you should say about making it personal, because I did want to address this too. The other day, at a fundraiser, the Prime Minister cracked a little wise with some Grassy Narrows protesters. He has apologized for it, but I'm wondering, from your point of view, you're in the Liberal caucus, you're not part of this, the quote-unquote inner circle of cabinet, but is the pressure getting to the Prime Minister a bit on this?
Well, I can't speak for the Prime Minister and what he's feeling. I know that I had a town hall in Guelph on Wednesday night, and I was asked a question in a way that my first reaction was to slough it off, and I had to suck it up and say, no, this person's asking a question. He's telling me that the previous government ran surpluses when they ran $153 billion deficits. Mm-hmm. I can say that in a different way than just sloughing it off, which is what I said was, you know, the federal Conservative Party had an artificial surplus at the end of their term by not spending money that was committed, and the money that they didn't spend was on RCMP and other essential services, on the veterans, on closing veterans offices. So the deficit will show up somewhere. It'll either show up on roads that aren't getting fixed, or it'll show up in troops that don't get the right support. So an artificial deficit on paper is one thing, where we're running deficits based on investing in Canada and creating jobs and creating social benefit. So back to the Prime Minister's comments, I think it showed some frustration. In our positions, we're not allowed to be frustrated in public. We are supposed to save our frustrations for when the camera's not rolling, and so sometimes that happens. But to his credit, he stood forward and said, you know, that wasn't appropriate for me to react that way, and he apologized right away, which I think speaks a lot about the character of our Prime Minister.
You tweet a lot and discuss a lot about reconciliation.
Sure.
And there are a lot of people in the Liberal caucus who are deeply invested in this issue, and indeed the Prime Minister ran on that issue too. And, you know, what kind of harm does it do? Do you think that, you know, the Grassy Narrows situation, well, being as difficult as it is, and, you know, it was like 2 seconds, but...
I think that in most cases... if not all cases, actions speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. I think the work that we've been doing on Indigenous reconciliation, as well as on supporting Indigenous communities, I've been personally involved with the Boiled Water Advisories. I've seen a lot of political statements. Even I got one from my brother on a text last night, too, saying that more Boiled Water Advisories are coming off and more going on. Well, those are all accounted in the numbers that we report, and I gave them a website that we're open on what we're doing there. I think progressing things in Grassy Narrows, we had promised to get something in place, and it never is done fast enough.
I do want to ask one more thing about the whole SNC-Lavalin thing.
SNC what?
SNC-Lavalin.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Sorry. I've heard of that.
Speaking of backhanded comments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm in public, aren't I? That's not frustration speaking.
Right.
No, I've been talking about that a little bit.
No, you earned it. We're sitting here today. I'm not sure if it's been released yet. I don't have my phone in front of me, but we're waiting for more information to be released by the former justice minister.
Yeah.
We have new controversy about the company itself. Apparently, really was telling people in the government that jobs were at stake.
Yeah.
My question is a bit more about procedure, though, because I find that it's been 2 months now, and speaking just as like a political observer, we keep kind of living for today. The government, we're going to deal with today's issues, and I think that we're just waiting for it to all come out. And I guess my question is, why can't we just have it all out?
Yeah, that was actually our question last week as well. We had a private caucus meeting, the Ontario caucus that I'm the secretary of, met with Jane Philpott last week, and what we thought was a private conversation, it did come out in public, and so that is what it is. I think we all want to know what is the end game, what's the end result, not game, because it's not a game, but what's the end result that they're trying to achieve, and how can we get past innuendos and get to actual information? And we have a number of ways as members of parliament that we're able to put our concerns on any table without fear of being sued or any kind of legal repercussions. So one of the avenues is through the committee process, and submitting a written brief to the committee is one way of doing this. Another is to just stand up in the House of Commons and say what's on your mind. And I challenged the government last year, and I challenged the Speaker on a ruling and said there was a piece of legislation from the Senate I wanted us to get onto the floor. The Speaker didn't want it. The government didn't want it. And I stood up and said, I want it. And this is why, the legal precedents. And we were able to bring it into the House. So I challenged the government myself. There's a way to do that. And then I worked with the government in terms of how the call before you dig legislation went forward. And we were able to solve the call before you dig federally without changing legislation, but by doing something creative with provinces and territories and with the associations involved. So there's many ways to solutions, but living behind innuendos, and I've got a secret I wish I could tell you, is not the way to be open and with Canadians. So whatever comes out, we'll deal with it as it comes out, and hopefully at some point we can see past the politics of the situation. And really my concern was around legality, and really we haven't been tampering with the justice system.
Right.
Nobody is accusing anybody at this stage of any of that, which satisfies me that the process is intact. And let's talk about the budget. We've got a lot of good things for Guelph, and let's keep going, because we've got limited amount of time to do a whole bunch of work, and that most of it doesn't have to do with a court case that's been going on since 2011.
And I hear you trying to pivot, but I think it's the death by a thousand cuts thing.
Yeah, of
course. The drip, drip, drip.
Of course.
And as you said, nothing illegal has been proven.
Right.
And it's just, it's still the top story or one of the top three stories every day on the news.
Yeah, and it constitutes a crisis in Canada. And you look at the one in the UK and other countries, the United States being another one.
All crises are not the same.
No, and the death
we agree about that.
The death by a thousand cuts is absolutely true, and it is a diversion. And actually, I would even say in public, as I am right now, that it's a diversionary tactic that we do have a budget to talk about, and this is more political than substantial. So, if the opposition wants to talk about politics, they'll talk about SNC-Lavalin. They'll have us vote for 31 hours on trying to delay things going through Parliament, which is, I mean, it's up to them to do. It's not up to them to block the presentation of the budget, as we saw last Tuesday. And the fact that the leader of the opposition used to be a Speaker of the House, I would have expected more from him. So that was really a bad situation that we went through. SNC-Lavalin is going through processes. There's external reviews. There's a court case going through, and it hasn't been diverted in any way. It continues to go through the court system. We've had a committee study to look at getting the testimonies from different people, and we've done that work, and it's been published in the National Post. And so I think we have done what we've needed to do to show Canadians that our institutions are intact and that democracy isn't under siege in Canada. So now we have to continue to work with that as we do, but we also have to get the budget in place, which we do every year. Mm-hmm. Coming into April, we're into the new fiscal year, and we need to approve the business plan for the country. And the business plan is not a diversionary tactic the way we're being told it is. SNC is the diversionary tactic, and the business plan for the country is what we need to get done. And we need it to pass before the end of June, before we go into the election.
I'll wrap up by asking about, and I'm going to phrase this in a particular way. I usually do end these interviews by asking you or any politician in that chair to just talk about what's going on that you don't think is getting attention. But I'm going to phrase it this way. Mm-hmm. What is concerning you these days?
The provincial government. The politics coming out of the provincial government and the spins. And the I like having good faith discussions. When people disagree, you can disagree in good faith, but when you disagree and just to try to make the other side look bad, that doesn't progress things. And I'm seeing so much coming from the province now, whether it's support of universities, and we're supporting universities by reducing the interest rates on student loans. We're doing what we can in terms of supporting education and knowledge and research. The provincial government is on a whole different agenda. Their agenda is to cut services, cut costs, and to balance a budget in a way that's harmful. And we're looking at investing in the country. And at some point, the balance may be there in terms of the growth of the economy. We've said right from the start that we would keep our debt to GDP at about the 30% level or below, which is what we're continuing to do as the economy grows. But the deficit will show up. If you don't spend the money on roads, or if you don't spend the money on social programs, you will be spending the money on further social programs or on car repairs or other things. And you have to continue to invest, whether it's a home or a business or a community. You have to continue to invest. You can't just cut costs and hope that everything will work out at the end of the day. You can't progress things when you're fighting. You have to find a way to common ground, and you have to do that through good faith negotiations. And we're just not seeing that. And that becomes very frustrating, because lashing out at the provincial government isn't going to be serving our community well. But we do have to point out when the provincial government is really trying to make the federal government look bad for no other reason than there's an election coming. Mm-hmm. And for that, the community suffers. And that's not what any of us are in public service to be, putting political agendas ahead of our communities.
There's an election coming?
Yeah. Do you think? So, and I'm looking forward to the thrust and parry, and as I say, the discussions and the differences of opinion expressed in positive ways. I'm looking forward to hearing who the Greens are going to be nominating next week. I understand the Conservatives, there's a few people now expressing some interest, and haven't heard much from the NDP yet, but when we have a full slate of candidates, we'll have some good conversations about what we think the future of Canada looks like, and then the community gets to decide from there.
We'll see how that goes, but for now, we'll leave it there. Lloyd Longfield, thanks again for dropping by. We'll let you get back to hacking now.
I'm going to go hacking. Thanks, Adam. It's always great to see you.
Thank you.
The 21st Annual Guelph Dance Festival will be taking place May 31st to June 2nd, 2019, the Guelph Dance Festival brings the best in Canadian contemporary dance to Guelph and will host 10 companies in 8 performances at 3 venues. From large-scale outdoor performances to intimate studio presentations, there is something for everyone. The wildly popular Pay What You Can In The Park series will feature 4 dance companies at Exhibition Park, while the On The Stage series will feature a full-length dance performance by Toronto's Fujiwara Dance Inventions based on Unoya, the award-winning conceptual poetry book by Christian Book. Ticket prices range from free to $30, but why not buy a festival pass today and save 20%? For more info, including locations, accessibility, and tickets, visit guelphdance.ca.
Ah, yes, Guelph Dance Festival. Always a good time. So before the break there, we heard Lloyd Longfield, who spoke to Adam earlier in April, and on, I believe it was the second week of April, when the Ontario budget dropped. We had none other than our MPP, Mike Schreiner. Well, that wasn't in studio either, but we pre-recorded that. So here's a pre-recording of a pre-recording of our discussion with Mike Schreiner about the Ontario budget 2019.
All right, we are sitting here with Mike Schreiner, MPP of Guelph. Kind of unusual to still like sort of say that
it's almost been a year.
Yeah, it has almost been a year, but still, we're here to talk about the biggest news story of the week. So we'll just start by asking you, Mike, who do you think is going to win the Iron Throne? We're here to talk about budget and other things.
Hey, I'm only on year 3, so I'm trying to catch up as fast as I can.
I'm cramming.
There's some pretty big stuff ahead in season 3 okay. that you may have already heard about. Let's just begin by getting your thoughts on the whole, on the budget, because, I mean, it's 300 some odd pages, a lot of ins and outs, but I mean, just, you know, in terms of your expectations, where does the budget, did your budget meet or exceed your expectations?
Well, I think, first of all, for me, budgets always reflect the values and priorities of a government. I mean, you know, governments can talk about a lot of things, but it's like, what does the budget focus on? And I think my biggest disappointment here is this budget focused so much on booze, gambling, and tailgate parties and really failed to address some of the biggest issues I know people in Guelph are talking about, housing affordability, healthcare, education, housing, all-day two-way go service, climate crisis. And to put that into context, we did a quick word search, and it talks about booze and gambling 63 times. It talks about climate change 15 times. Many of those were opposing climate solutions instead of actually offering climate solutions. And the kicker for me, and it says a lot about this government, it didn't mention poverty once.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know we have, I mean, we know we've had a lot of work done in Guelph around, you know, issues around homelessness. We know there's a mental health and addictions crisis. We know there's a lot of people struggling in poverty right now. And for this government to not address those issues, I thought was very short-sighted. And I've had some radio commentators say to me, it's like, well, can they, you know, liberalize alcohol sales and address other issues at the same time? And yes, they can, but they didn't in this budget.
Right. And it's a matter of, you know, a lot of people are asking for more opioid funding, and opioids, the word opioid is mentioned twice in the budget.
Exactly.
And, you know, it does send kind of mixed messages that you're closing safe consumption sites, but making it okay to drink booze in a park and after buying it at a bar at 9 a.m.
Yeah, we can buy booze earlier. It looks like we're going to be able to buy it in more places. We can tailgate and drink beer and look at our new license plates. But you know what? We're not addressing poverty. We're not addressing housing affordability. We're not addressing the opioid crisis. We're not addressing a wide range of mental health and addictions issues. And we're having cuts to healthcare and education, which are really core services. And I think one of the things that some of the media commentary has been, oh, this budget didn't cut as much as everyone thought it would. But if you look at what the Financial Accountability Office reports, so if funding for healthcare and education is going to keep up with population and inflation, this budget over 5 years is a $10 billion cut to healthcare and a $6 billion cut to education.
Right.
And we are not going to address, you know, the hallway medicine crisis we're facing with that kind of cut over the next 5 years. And we're not going to address quality issues in terms of, you know, how do we make sure that our children receive the education they deserve with those kinds of cutbacks.
I guess the question is then, who is this serving? Because The most paradoxical part of this is that there's about $8 billion more in proposed program spending than even the Liberals were proposing before they were voted out last year. But at the same time, I mean, as you said, there are all these sort of like, I mean, you have to look at the back of the book to find where the cuts are.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think they're talking to? Who do you think they're consulting on these things?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been trying to figure that out myself, too, because I tell you what, I have knocked on, as you know, thousands of doors in Guelph, and you know, I've knocked on doors in other communities supporting other candidates, and I have yet to have a single constituent tell me, you know what, we need to drink beer at 9 a.m., or that we need a new license plate, or that, you know, tailgate parties are my number one, or I need to buy, you know, lotto tickets off my cell phone.
Right.
You know, like, those are the kinds of things this budget for. I don't have anybody telling me that. I have a ton of people talking to me about housing affordability especially. I have tons of people talking about all-day two-way go. I've tons of people concerned about the climate crisis we're facing, mental health and addictions. Those are the things people come into my office and talk to me about. Those are the things people talk about when I'm knocking on doors. You know what? I'm waiting for the first person to come in and tell me, Mike, tailgating is our number one priority.
But speaking of priorities, sir, then what does the budget tell you about what the government's priorities are?
Well, I think, you know, it's almost like they wanted to put some shiny objects to get us all talking about booze and gambling and not about the real issues that we're facing. And, you know, one of the things that has been really overlooked in this budget that I've talked a lot about is the one program that really ballooned the budget out of whack that the Liberals brought in was the fair. They called it the Fair Hydro Plan. Mm-hmm. I call it the Unfair Hydro Plan. It's the plan that subsidizes electricity prices. That's costing between $2.5 and $3 billion a year. According to the Financial Accountability Officer, it's going to cost us $40 to $90 billion over the next two decades. That's what's thrown the budget out of whack. I think that in the Conservatives, when they were in opposition, they railed against it. I railed against it. If we're going to be fiscally responsible, if we're going to talk about how do we bring the budget into balance, and you know, I believe we need to do that. I want our money being spent on essential public services, not on interest on debt, then we need to have a credible plan forward. And so for me, getting rid of the Liberals' unfair hydro plan and using that money to ensure that we're not cutting things like education and healthcare. And I know you have a lot of university students. There's a $470 million cut to financial assistance programs for students, a $350 million year-over-year cut in environment ministries at a time that we're facing a climate crisis, the Indigenous Affairs budget is being cut in half, $1 billion being taken out of community and children's services, programs that support our most vulnerable children. And then I look back and think, oh, no wonder the government eliminated the Environment Commissioner's Office and the Child Advocate's Office, because the two watchdogs that would be best positioned to talk about how these cuts are going to affect people's day-to-day lives, they're no longer in business as of April 1st.
Right.
So something that wasn't a cut necessarily, but it included one as well. I'm normally not the good news guy. It sounded like there was a little bit in there about additional service via Go on the Kitchener line. But there's no details. Just like there's going to be more trains, but high speed once again has been killed off for the X time in 30 years or whatever, right? Is that it's just gone?
Yeah, I mean, high speed's pretty much put on the shelf. You know what? My perspective on that one is I want high speed rail, but the focus right now should be electrified all day two way go in direct bus services. And unfortunately, the budget was largely silent on all day two way go for the KW Guelph line. The other thing that people aren't talking about is the promised additional gas tax dollars for municipal transit has been taken off the table as well. And I think the mayor made some comments that, you know, we hadn't put that into our budgeting. But certainly, and so good for the city in that respect.
John Tory said that Toronto had.
Yeah, but Toronto had. So Toronto's going to be looking at it. They're going to be in a really tough position. But for the Guelph implication of this is that if we're going to, if we were hoping for enhanced local transit service, we're not going to get that. And I think anybody who, rides the bus here in Guelph realizes we'd like to see better service. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. People want better service. But, you know, and that money, if it was still on the table, would provide better service. Unfortunately, Ford government took it off the table, and I think I have serious implications in cities like Toronto.
To follow up on what Scotty said, though, that, you know, it's not just about the two-way all-day go. Did I get that right? Two-way all-day? Mm-hmm. Yes, good. Because sometimes I get it backwards. But I think there's a real hunger here for more regional bus service. People want
absolutely
to get, you know, a GO bus to Cambridge or Waterloo or Hamilton or St. Catharines, London. What's the sticking point there? Because I, having talked to Metrolinx people myself, there is a willingness, and it sounds like that, you know, they have their methods and studies and things, but from the sound of it, it seems like public pressure is the thing they listen to most.
Yeah, I think if we want direct bus service, we need to put pressure on the government. I'm putting pressure on as an individual MPP, but I think they need to hear it more from the public. And I think also particularly directed to regional members of the Conservative caucus need to hear it as well. And, you know, I tell this story a lot. My daughter goes to Laurier, and I'll never forget a couple years ago the very first Thanksgiving when she was going to come home.
Good luck.
I said, well, I brought you a Presto card. Like, just take the bus. It's like, Dad, it's like two and a half hour bus ride. I'm like, what? From Waterloo? You got to be kidding me. She's like, no, really? It's a silent check. I'm like, yeah, it is a 2.5 hour bus ride. So that's just ridiculous.
Well, it's an hour long layover in Aberfoyle.
Well, that's just it. Yeah. She was like, I got to go to Cambridge, and I go to Aberfoyle. Like, I sit in Aberfoyle for an hour, and then I get to Guelph. I'm like, don't worry, sweetie. I'll come and just pick you up in the car. You know, like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, and I saw tons of people in Guelph saying, like, we should have at the very least, a direct bus route to KW, Cambridge, and Hamilton. And and to me, that's sort of, that could be put in place tomorrow if there really was a political will to do it. I mean, I realize with all day two-way go, there's still negotiations with CN Rail in particular, and I had somebody in from CN in my office yesterday and was really pressing the case. And you know, I think CN definitely is like, we want to be at the table. We want to make this happen. We know it's a priority. So, and the government keeps telling me that we are going to hear something positive about all day two-way go sometime in the near future. The minister keeps promising me that. So I'm going to keep pressing that issue, but it was certainly disappointing to see really no mention of it in the budget.
Bypass or no bypass from the CN guy.
Yeah. I think they're looking at alternative ways of addressing that issue, and I kind of have to leave it at that at this point.
Okay, fair enough. Did you have anything to...
No, that was great.
Okay.
Everything answered.
I wanted to get your thoughts about this thing that happened. We're recording this on Saturday, but this happened Friday. The incident involving MPP Linda Park at the Oshawa Convention Center, because I'm worried that this is a sign of things to come, that, you know, fortunately no one was hurt, but there was a very strong sort of feeling that a lot of the protesters there that were there to protest against Vic Fedeli and the budget, someone could have really gotten hurt.
Yeah, no, that worries me. No, you're right. And we've had some pretty strong protests, even at Queen's Park itself, where people have been escorted out of Queen's Park. And so the thing I've been telling the public is by all means protest, by all means organize and mobilize, but, you know, let's keep personal threats out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep it peaceful and respectful, because the one thing we don't want to do is if it goes past that line of what's respectful and peaceful, then the story becomes about the inappropriateness of the protest and not the message that the protest is delivering. And so I don't want to see the public's pushback against what the Ford government is doing be derailed by protests that cross a line that shouldn't be crossed.
Right. Because I think that, and we've seen this in the United States a lot, but I think it's particularly pronounced here and since the changeover in government that, you know, tempers are flaring. People are being pushed into their corners. And I think you probably feel this, too, as a caucus of one in Queen's Park. And a lot of people look to you and you know, believe in your politics and your policies. And they see what the government does. It has a majority, so there's not much wiggle room. But, you know, what room is there for influence, do you think?
You know, I think there is room, and I'll give you two concrete examples. So first of all, Schedule 10 of Bill 66, which would have opened the Greenbelt up for development, undermined the Clean Water Act and other environmental protections. I remember I was the first opposition MPP to raise that issue in question period, and I was told I should be ashamed of myself.
How dare
you ask a question about protecting our water in the Greenbelt? You know, like, I should be ashamed of myself. And the pushback from the government was really harsh and quick. But you know what? The public between December, the end of December when that bill was introduced, and February when we came back for the you know, spring sitting, mobilized, and you know, cities including Guelph and many others passed resolutions against it. There were signs going up. All, matter of fact, I still see a few signs up here and there.
I saw somebody with a button the other
day. Yeah, exactly. So we stopped it. We did it. We won that one. And so the government backed off, and they backed off because of public pressure and public pressure from different, you know, from citizens, from municipal governments, and from organizations like the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. And then the second one is the autism program. I mean, the, you know, the protests have been intense and sustained. And I can tell you, I've had a lot of, you know, parents, service providers, advocates, experts, people with autism in my office. I know there's been a lot of emotional protests directed towards the government. And for weeks, the government and the minister said, we've made our decision. We're not backing down. We've made our decision. We're not backing down. And finally, they backed down. And, you know, the consultations that they're holding now, they should have held those starting last summer.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, like, why do you hold the consultations after you, you know, introduce the disastrous program? So, you know, we've lost, you know, 8, 9, 10 months, you know, that those consultations should have happened before. But, you know, the fact that they've backtracked on elements of the autism plan, and they're now saying they're willing to sit down with parents and people with autism and advocates and experts and have a robust consultation. And so, you know, that shows you that public pressure did force the government to backtrack. And so I think that's what it's going to take. But it needs to be done in a peaceful and respectful way. I mean, some people, and I'm don't want this to sound egotistical in any way, but a lot of people have said to me, it's like, Mike, you're as a person, one person, you're almost the most effective opposition right now.
Right.
And I think some of that's because I've tried to do it in a respectful way. So I ask tough questions. You know, I put out some tough statements here and there, but I don't hurdle insults. I don't, you know, engage in name calling. I don't engage in inappropriate decorum. And I think that's almost makes me more effective approaching it that way.
Right.
And so I would really encourage, like, strong protests, but don't cross a line. I thought an example of that was the student walkouts for opposing education cuts, and also the student walkouts for the climate strike. Incredibly inspiring. Well done. Students were incredibly articulate. They didn't cross a line. I think the same thing with the teachers' demonstration at Queen's Park last weekend, which was huge. That was done in an incredibly respectful way, and I think that's the effective way of doing it.
Sounds like there's going to be more of that to come as well, if the rumbling's anything to go by. So, Mike, what do you think would be, and I'm sure you've given this a lot of thought, in terms of a green alternative budget, your vision of, I know that's a big and loaded question, but maybe just the finer points of, I mean, obviously, there's alternatives waiting in the wings. What's your vision?
Yeah. That's a good question, Scotty. Thank you for that. Because oftentimes opposition parties just oppose.
Yeah. Right?
And I've tried to do things differently by, you know, pointing out, you know, being critical, but also offering alternatives. And so I think a few big picture is I see us moving to balance in 5 years. So from a big picture perspective, but our priorities would be, you know, totally different than this government's. So, I mean, first of all, I'd be looking at ways that we can raise additional revenue to fund core services. Ontario, according to the Financial Accountability Officer, has the lowest rate of return on natural resource wealth of any province in the country, even though we're the largest mining jurisdiction in the country. So, you know, obviously, you know, Alberta is going to have higher rates just because of the oil sands.
Right.
But there's a lot of room for additional revenue from our natural resource wealth in Ontario. I'd reverse the tax cut the Conservatives brought in the fall economic statement that went to the, you know, highest earners. You know, that took substantial revenue out of the Treasury. So I'd look at things like that in terms of raising additional revenue. I would look at saving money in different ways than the Conservatives had. So instead of cutting core services, instead of cutting programs that, you know, that protect our most vulnerable children or provide access to post-secondary education, healthcare, education, et cetera, we'd get rid of the Liberals' unfair hydro plan. Like, you know, that's a, you know, $2.5 to $3 billion a year budget hit to take 25% off people's electricity prices. A program that primarily benefits the wealthy because they're the ones who use the largest most of, amount of electricity, which isn't to say, you know, I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm just saying it's more of a priority. So right. I would rather see any subsidies in energy go to the people who need it the most. So low-income people who truly are having to choose between heating and eating, providing support for them. But that other money, I think, would be better spent on healthcare, on education, on Indigenous affairs, on helping our most vulnerable children. I think that dealing with the mental health and addictions crisis, bringing in a real housing affordability plan. And so, you know, that's the kind of vision we would look at. And then the final one I want to bring in is that Ontario spends around $3 billion on business support programs. And I think given the climate crisis we're facing, given the need to transition to a clean economy and take advantage of the $26 trillion clean economy globally, would be to reorientate those business programs to support companies that are either transitioning into the clean economy or those entrepreneurs who are building clean economy companies.
So a lot of what you mentioned there were the things that were cut. Some of those slashes were quite deep, actually. Now, we were only able to catch part of the budget as it happened because we were going to go on the air, mm-hmm. and you were obviously in the House. Was any of that mentioned at all? Like
in the budget speech?
In the speech itself. No. Like the speech is always a positive thing, and then and then you have to filter through all of it and count on the people that were in the lockup to get the info. But in terms of was I'm just wondering if, like, was any cut mentioned at all, or is it just
– No.
Other than the unfair carbon tax, which isn't even a, you know –
So you want to talk about it? So
kept hearing
you're
that.
You're going to get
unfair
me off. Yeah, exactly.
It's unfair.
So here's a government that came in on, you know, respect taxpayer dollars, the whole Ford banter, right? So here's a government that's spending $30 million on a frivolous lawsuit against the federal government,
right?
Trying to sabotage climate action. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars they're spending on this campaign that they're doing where the premier and his ministers are traveling around the province trying to sabotage climate solutions.
Right.
Now they come out with this sticker idea where they're going to mandate stickers on gas pumps that only talk about one-third of the story. They only talk about what carbon pricing is going to cost. They don't talk about the rebate everyone's getting or the cost of what the climate crisis is facing. And so I'm just asking the people of Ontario, how many people voted for a government to waste tax dollars on a campaign to sabotage climate solutions, which I would almost argue is you know, an underhanded way of helping to finance Andrew Scheer's campaign against the federal government. So I would say, is that like an inappropriate campaign expense contribution from the Ontario government into the federal campaign? I don't think anybody voted for that. Even if you're a voter who opposes carbon pricing, and I recognize there are people out there who do, and that's a legitimate policy debate. And I know the premier ran on that, but I don't know of anybody who ran on a campaign that they want to see their tax dollars used to finance a campaign to sabotage climate solutions.
Because that sticker sounds like a little federal election sign, essentially. I wonder if anybody's going to challenge it. I saw it, I was like, this is a little election sign that's going to be on every pump in the province.
Well, it's almost more insidious than that, too, because they're talking about fines if you don't put the stickers on the pumps, which is a tax on small businesses, because a lot of gas stations are small businesses.
And let's remind everyone that this is the same government that's imposed free speech regulations on universities, right?
Yeah.
And so now they're going to impose their own speech on private enterprise?
Yeah, it's an onion of hypocrisy. It's that's really quite shocking. I do want to ride that a bit, though, because I know that you've attacked when you were the Green candidate nomination a couple of weeks ago, that it does seem like Doug Ford and the PC government's carrying a lot of water for the federal Conservatives. And I've heard discussion of that in the budget as well, that it wasn't quite the hack and slash budget because they're trying to make the federal Conservatives more appealing, that, you know, going into this fall's federal election. Is there a possibility then that when we come to not we're trying to think that far ahead to next year's election, next year's budget, but, you know, looking ahead to next year's budget, might we, you know, see a change in either, and it could be a change either way. It could be a change that we're going to forget that hack and slash, or it could be a change. And you know this because your private member's bill to protect the Paris gold moraine goes to committee after second reading, unanimous vote, which would obviously include the PCs.
That's so
it's not like they're completely anti-environment. They they can be pro-environment in the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I guess what way does this go after we get the federal election out of the way?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I hesitate to speculate just because I'm not a pundit. I'm a politician at this point, and I realize I have a responsibility as Guelph's MPP. But that does worry me. But just to put that into perspective, so you know, the government, the federal government, actually is. Put a substantial amount of money into infrastructure, and they did that through four streams. And up until recently, the government, the provincial government, has blocked intake. So I think you probably saw our MP Lloyd Longfield put out a letter, and Mayor Guthrie commented on this as well, is that the provincial government's actually been blocking federal infrastructure dollars into Ontario. Now, they have opened two of the streams up for rural infrastructure and for transit, but there's still two streams that they haven't opened up. And here we are, you know, mid-April. And so if they don't open up those two streams, we're going to lose a construction season.
Yeah.
And so I think there are little things like that that, you know, along with the more public things that are happening, such as, you know, the I call it the sabotage climate solutions campaign that's going on, that would suggest that this government is trying to is campaigning as much against the federal government as they are trying to govern Ontario. And you could make the same point about, you know, how much does this premier really want to be premier of Ontario or the mayor of Toronto? Because he spent the first few months of his term really focused on Toronto City Council and meddling in Toronto City Council elections. And then after that, he's really focused a lot of his work has been opposing the Trudeau Liberals and hammering the Trudeau Liberals. And it's like, so, you know, are you carrying water for Andrew Scheer? And are you more concerned about campaigning in the federal election? And then their big transit announcement was totally focused on Toronto again and ripping up everything the city of Toronto had done to really impose the premier's vision of what transit should look like in Toronto. And so there are times where I wonder, does, you know, Mr. Ford, does he want to be the premier of Ontario or does he want to be the mayor of Toronto or the federal prime minister? And so it's like, pick your lane and stick in your lane and do your job.
I guess I wonder, too, if there's a lesson in this, because I think the budget is sort of like really the first big policy document of the Ford, not just the Ford government, but of even Ford's tenure as the provincial PC leader.
Because, yeah, well, they had no platform.
Right, they had no platform. There were some vague promises. You know, they've done things, of course, in the course of government that they didn't run on. You know, I guess what is the lesson of that campaign then? You know, as we're sort of going into this government, we're not really sure what the blueprint is.
Oh, in some ways, we still don't know what the blueprint is. And some of that, actually, it's been interesting because there's been some commentary comparing the Ford government to the Harris government, obviously. And, you know, the Harris government, they imposed deep cuts. It really was a slash and burn budget. But they campaigned on it. Like, they literally – so they actually delivered on what they campaigned on. And the – like, they knew how government worked. And so, you know, the cuts, it was part of a broader strategy. And so it was implemented in a way that, you know, certainly led to teacher strikes, certainly led to, you know, big public opposition. But it was part of a bigger plan. So you might have disagreed with that plan, but it was part of a plan. And they campaigned on that plan. The Ford government's almost the exact opposite. It's like – people still don't quite know what this government's plan is. They didn't have a platform they campaigned on. The budget really doesn't offer much of a vision, which is why I've been so focused on their vision seems to be booze and gambling. Like, if you think about how much this premier is talking about, it's like between buck a beer and, you know, all of his, like, you know, the cannabis obviously was imposed on them. But, I mean, that's what they, the thing they talk about the most in the budget is you know, how do we make gambling easier? How do we make drinking easier? And they're like, I'm trying to still figure out what the rest of the narrative is, other than the premier trying to rebrand the province through, you know, a new logo, license plates, et cetera. And so there's a part of me like, you know, you're not the CEO of Deco Labels anymore. You're a premier of a province. So what is your vision for healthcare and education and you know, transit, et cetera, et cetera?
Do you think some of the focus on liquor and gambling is coming from lobbying? Because Doug Ford always says that he doesn't drink. Neither does Vic Fedeli. So you're these sober people.
Right.
So, not even sober second thought, whatever. But yet somehow, why do you think it may be, you know, there's other forces at work trying to push this agenda? Because where is, I mean, it's not just coming from the back pocket, right? If they don't drink, why do you care? Why do you care if you're tailgating? Why
do
you
care? Fair point. Yeah.
I've been trying to figure that one out myself, Scotty. You know, some of it is maybe they're trying to look at, you know, what are some easy things that sort of can talk directly to how somebody lives their life. And so it's like, hey, you know, you want to go to the Argos game? We're going to let you tailgate, you know, or you know, you want to, you know, so you get off, like you do the night shift, you get off work at 8 a.m., you know, like 9 a.m. for that person is like 9 p.m. for somebody else, right? So you can go have a beer, whatever, you know? And so, and those are sort of almost easy, doesn't take a lot of work, doesn't cost a lot of money, things that they can say they're delivering that distracts from some of the other things they're doing. So, I mean, one of the things that's disappointed me about much of the commentary about the budget is very little commentary about, you know, cutting Indigenous Affairs budget in half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The fact that all legal aid for immigrant and refugees has been completely eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
Huge cut, like both the Ministry of the Environment and the Ministry of Natural Resources, so the two ministries most responsible for protecting the environment, especially as we're dealing with the climate crisis, huge year-over-year cuts, $1 billion out of Children and Community Services. So there were significant cuts. Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing was cut even. I mean, mm-hmm. here we are. I mean, we know we have a housing affordability crisis, and the ministry responsible for it has faced a cut. And so I think part of it for me is like, their strategy was almost like, okay, let's give some increases to healthcare and education, even though those increases are not at the rate of inflation or population growth. So essentially, they're cuts, but they're nominal cuts, not like direct cut.
Yeah,
because it's still some extra money going in.
Right, they're not keeping up with
They're not keeping up with funding growth, but they didn't like actually decrease the amount of money going there.
Right.
So I think it was almost like, okay, let's protect healthcare and education to a limited extent, or pretend like we are. And let's do all the stuff around rebranding and booze and gambling and everything else, because hopefully no one's going to notice all the other cuts that have happened. And in some respects, they've been somewhat successful, because so much of the commentary has been, oh, it's not as slash and burn as we thought it was going to be.
Right.
And we're all like, I mean, I listen to all kinds of radio programs and watching mm-hmm. TV programs. I'm seeing what's in the newspapers. And a lot of the commentary has been on more booze than gambling, but has been on that. And so in a sense, they have succeeded in distracting us, which is why I've been really trying to emphasize some of these other areas. You know, $473 million cut to student financial assistance for post-secondary students. I mean, there's some substantial cuts in other areas that I think, you know, hopefully as the debate and commentary on the budget rolls out over the next week or so, that people are going to start realizing some of the other areas in which real pain is going to be felt because of this budget.
Right. And I would add, too, that as someone who appreciates individual rights, that mm-hmm. people should be allowed to make their own choices, and I think that's fine. People are capable of doing that. I will only say that, having worked down the road from the Stampede Ranch for 3 years, that's not always the case. Maybe to wrap up, what's coming up next at the legislature? Because, I mean, the budget is the big thing every spring. But, mm-hmm. you know, what's going to be going on in the next couple of months that we should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, well, so the healthcare bill has just come back from committee. And so we'll be doing third reading debate on that, which, you know, is a huge restructuring of our healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the budget's going to – so that and the budget are going to really be dominant issues. The committee I'm on, general government, will be doing hearings starting Monday on the government hydro bill. So there are changes to the hydro bill. Some of the things that I'm keeping an eye on, and I have to say this with my green hat on, of course, is the government is reviewing almost every major piece of legislation around the environment. So the Agri-Resources Act, Waste Reduction Act, the Far North Act, Endangered Species Act. So they're all – Conservation Authorities Act. So anybody who is you know, interested in issues around protecting the places we love
mm-hmm.
and other species and habitat and ecological diversity, keep your eyes open because almost all those pieces of legislation are under review right now, and there will likely be legislative changes proposed out of those reviews, and I think most of them will not be good for the environment.
Yeah, too many bald eagles walking around. But anyway, Mike, thanks again for your time, and we always appreciate it when you take some time to stop by, and you're heading back to Toronto now?
I will be. I go in Sunday night, come back Thursday night, but can I just put one more thing in?
Yes.
I've been submitting thousands of petition signatures to support CFRU, and I'm a big fan of CFRU, and so keep sending me those petitions, and I will keep fighting for campus radio.
We appreciate that. We don't take praise very well, but we will take that praise. Anyway, thanks again, Mike.
Absolutely, anytime.